Welcome to Dental Brain Crops and happy Valentine's Day. I'm your host, Chelsea Myers, and this is so exciting. Today, I have one of my new friends, Sam Strain, and we are going to get into some really interesting things. Sam, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And it's a great day to be with you on Valentine's Day. I love it. I've never done a podcast on Valentine's Day, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have either. Mine used to not be live. And so maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But this is great. This is really exciting.
Right. Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So for those who may not know, Sam is a partner and chief development officer with HealthStream.Ventures. And HealthStream is a transaction advisory firm offering buy-side M&A capital information services for private equity and their portfolio companies in dental and medical organization space. And beyond that, you have just such a cool history. So as I was reading through your bio, I was like, you know, I'm not just going to read all this. I actually want to talk about this stuff.
Give me
your version of your bio, and then I want to get into some of this.
Okay, perfect. Well, again, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. And those that know I'm really animated, so I'll try not to let my thoughts kind of get ahead of me today as they usually do. But, I've been in the industry for 20 years now. It seems like it was just yesterday. I come from a family of 7 dentists. And so, you know, I grew up talking about dentistry, I think, you know, much younger than most. My sister became a dentist and, I kind of fell in love with the industry, but yeah, I didn't really think I wanted to become a dentist because, you know, quite frankly, I don't think I could look in a mouth all day. And so I got started on the business side of dentistry and really got, you know, captivated with what makes these practices tick. And gosh, it takes such a unique individual to be a dentist because, you know, as a dentist, you wear a lot of different hats. You're not only the clinician, but you're the CEO and you're the marketer and you're the HR person. And it's just a very dynamic, deep industry. And, it affords a lot of opportunities. And I think that that's what's kept it really exciting for me is because, you know, the field is rapidly evolving, but we're still, and many would say we're a little bit behind, you know, the medical field, but I think that's such a great, you know, opportunity for all of us involved now because we can help, you know, shape shift it, which is really cool. So anyway, I went into the business side of dentistry. I got a job with Patterson Dental. Before that, I was with Burkhart Dental. I started a scratch territory, no catalog. And so I was running around Bentonville, Arkansas with no catalog and people were looking at me like I had 3 heads. I was like, yeah, just buy from me. I don't really know my prices. I ended up building just a really good network of people that believed in me. And, you know, honestly, business is not hard if you just do the right thing, you know? And so that's what I was known for. I'm just going to do the right thing. I mean, when all else fails, just do the right thing. it's really not hard. And so I ended up being Rookie of the Year. And then I went on to start another scratch territory for Getsy Dental. I won't explain why I had all these moves. You know, it's life, hashtag life, right? So I started again and ended up building another, you know, just amazing network of dentists in the Kansas City area. And then I found myself in Charlotte, North Carolina, starting my 3rd scratch territory. So, and what I noticed was that, you know, when you're a distribution rep, when you're starting out, you get all the accounts that no one wants. Okay. So like basically no one's been able to develop relationships with these people. Here you go. Go have it. And, you know, you eat what you kill in that industry. And so, you know, I was working on a fierce appetite because I like nice shoes. So I went out there and I noticed that there was just a lot of dentists on my territory that were women and they didn't know each other. And I'm not really a sorority girl. I'm not also like a girl power girl. I'm like a just a great power girl. Like, let's just have all the right
Yes.
people at the table. Okay, so I just went around instead of like talking about all the great things that Patterson sold, I would talk about my next event, and my next event would happen to be, mani-pedi night sponsored by Sirona Scent Supply. And we'd have 40 ladies out to get free mani-pedis, and we would, hear the latest and greatest technology from Scent Supply. So it was sort of the first of its kind, and and this was 15 years ago, and it kind of trickled out of, what I thought, larger than what I thought it would become. And I ended up having like 250 women dentists in this little network. Then we started running like HR, like, hey, who's going on maternity leave? Let me help you find somebody. Because, obviously as a dentist, you just can't like pick up the phone and be like, hey, I'm going on maternity leave. You need somebody that does the type of dentistry that you do and that you trust. So we sort of became this little recruiting slash, we were just helpers, and if we found something where, one person, one practice was having a lot of success with something, we'd have that dentist come and share with the whole group, like, hey, I've done this. It really worked great. And here's how you can do it too. So we just sort of started our own little think tank. Anyway, long story, but I ended up leaving Patterson. Well, I'll just tell you, they didn't fully love the idea. I don't know why. And well, I do know why now. I'm not going to get into it today. But, I ended up getting a call from a man by the name of Chuck Cohen. What a dear soul. He's the CEO of Benco Dental. He's like, I love what you're doing. I'd love for you to come over here and help, my sales team build these little groups of women dentists across the nation. So that's what I ended up doing after Patterson. And that kind of spun off into what Benco launched as the Lucy Hobbs Project, which is a nonprofit organization that honors women in dentistry. And Lucy Hobbs was the first female dentist, so that's hence the name. Okay, so then at the same time, I'm launching this software, and I just saw a need that, no one in the dental practice really could track anything going on with their equipment. And again, this is 15 years ago. And, because I was constantly getting called, like, hey, Sam, what's the warranty on my handpiece? Or, hey, Sam, my pan is down. So I was like, we need to put this online. And so we did that, and I had 123 users. And then when I went to raise capital, I couldn't get the capital I needed to make this work. And look, I was in my, mid-20s. I had no idea what I was doing. I was going out. And I've always been walking into rooms, like God sent me there. So I'd go into these rooms and I'd be like, hey, private equity, or actually at the time it was, venture capital guys. And really it was guys, it wasn't gals. I was gonna say gals, but there was really no gals in the room. And so they would always hit me on, but you don't have a SAS background and you don't have a, I was like, no, but I know dentistry. And let me tell you how I know dentistry is because I've grown up in the space. So anyway, I ended up folding that company, and that's okay because it was an exciting adventure and it was something that I believed in. It takes a lot of capital to run, a technology company. But fast forward to today, we have Uptime Health. Uptime Health is pretty much the exact replication. I mean, it's way more advanced because technology is advanced, but it was the vision of what I had thought I wanted to do. And, the cool thing is I met Janesh Patel, the CEO of Uptime Health, and he heard my story and he invited me to be on his advisory board for Uptime Health. And so I've been helping Uptime Health. I feel like I've been able to, that sort of hiccup in my life has come full circle, and I've been able to, see that vision sort of manifested itself in a later date. And honestly, the timing is right for it now with the growth of the DSOs and the consolidation that's going on. But I will tell you that Uptime Health was one of Dia's first investments, Dental Innovation Alliance. And Uptime Health also won the Forsyth DenTech Award And so I was on the verge of something. I was just a little bit ahead of my time. And I think that's sort of been the story of my life, you know, just a bit, little bit ahead of my time. I'm good at understanding what's going on in the market and hearing what the market is saying. But sometimes I'm a little bit, oh, but if we did this, then this, then this, mm-hmm. and I'm too far down the road. And so that's where having a team of people around me has really helped me accelerate my career because, you know, they've said, okay, Sam, but let's slow down because we need to think about X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, I'm really here today. I'm a product of, you know, climbing mountains and falling below sea level, but then having people around me saying, oh, but let me pick you up and let's do it again. And now with, you know, fast forward to today, you know, I really, you know, I like to say that I help the most iconic, innovative thinkers in this space build iconic, revolutionary, just legendary companies, whatever you want to say to it. You know, my company helped bring Vivartis to market, and Vivartis is pretty much one of the, it's the only technology that remineralizes your tooth's enamel. So mm-hmm. it'll eliminate the watch areas. It's really amazing for in-store growth. Heartland's just incorporated it into their practices, you know, and it's going to go nationwide soon to their practices. And so
congratulations.
Thank you.
So exciting.
It's really cool. And it's really cool because, you know, these are two female founders that started this. They bought this technology. They actually started the first DSO in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And they grew that from nothing. They started in train stations. It became, you know, hundreds of practices, and they sold to Jacobs Holding, and then they acquired this technology that they renamed Vivartis. And so anyway, it's been a really exciting journey, but I help founders, you know, we go do a lot of go-to-market strategy, but things that revolve around DSOs. And we also, you know, I am the chief development officer of, like you mentioned, of HealthStream Ventures. And we're a buy-side transaction advisory group. So we're helping the DSOs scale intelligently through acquiring practices that meet their, you know, their objectives. And I'm really passionate about that too, because there's so many DSOs that are coming up now that really, they don't have, you know, the ability to hire a full development team to help them scale, you know, with analysts and people that have experience. And, you know, I was part of the growing of American Dental Partners. That was actually my first job in DSO land 12, 13 years ago. And they, that's an interesting story too. You know, they called me up. I got this call from this group called JLL, and they're like, hey, we have this underperforming asset. We need a creative thinker to help us grow this. But we ended up doing some really cool things to foster not only, you know, in-store growth, but acquisitions done a different way, where, you know, a lot of times we think about acquisitions as we're going to go and we're going to acquire a practice that's in our geographic region, and it's going to need to be, you know, 2 million in EBITDA or whatever it is. But we actually took a reverse look because we didn't have a lot of capital. So what we did is we took a reverse look and we looked at what do we currently have in our footprint that has capacity? And a lot of our practices, you know, they'd have four or five chairs that they weren't even using. And so mm-hmm. I'd go out there and I'd find another doctor that, you know, might have only, you know, a $600,000 practice, which is not, I say that with all the love in the world. I mean, $600,000, you know, that's their life's work. But it was just big enough and just perfect enough for us to roll that into our nearby location. So we did a lot of those. And, you know, when you do those types of acquisitions, really what you're doing is you're improving your profitability by not taking on the expenses of, you know, another whole location. And it takes some finagling. Like no one really just wants to like roll in their practice to another practice. But I do find that one of my gifts is being able to connect with these dentists in ways that, is impactful because I understand the industry and I also want to be able to take their legacy and let it live on, even if it's embodied in another group or another, in another practice. I think that, that's the story of life. We all build on each other's stories.
Yeah, and you know what's really beautiful about what you're saying? It's kind of shining through. You talked about, you tried some things early on and they didn't work out for you. And a lot of people at that point stop. They're like, okay, well, let me find another avenue. And that's obviously not what you did. You just kept going. And I'd love to hear your mindset around that because I feel like that is a connection point you're able to now have when you go and talk to people whose businesses are either not thriving or are failing. You understand that firsthand and you're like, hey, here's how we reposition. We don't have to walk away from this and you don't have to just watch it sink. We can reposition this. Talk to me about how you think through those types of challenges.
Everything in life that I've encountered really just comes down to mindset. Like if the hard is kind of what makes it great, that's a quote from League of Their Own. But if you can just get over the fact that, man, I think we beat ourselves up so much too. Like I worked so hard to get here and now look at it. But look at it, look at it from a beginner's mindset is kind of how I always approach these things too. So if you're looking at your practice or your group and you're like, ah, what can we do with this now? Gosh, we've worked so hard, little, maybe just back up and look at it again from a beginner's mindset. Like, what would I do differently now, knowing what I know now, and then start putting, reverse engineering that, right? So it's never too late, to sink the ship. I always love captains of boats, captains of ships. They go down with their ship. And I come from a military family. My dad was a colonel in special forces, and so he's gone a lot, but learning what he did and looking back, it takes a lot of muscle to lead people. And so if you're not clear on how you can fix the problem and you don't know exactly who could help you fix the problem, I think, going and resetting with yourself for a little bit, like just take a Saturday and go on a drive, rent a car. This is what I do sometimes. I rent a convertible and I just make my husband drive me around in the countryside. And we reset, and then we sort of look at things again with that beginner's mindset, and then that leader mindset of like, I can't give up because there's a lot of people counting on me. And not do I need to just get myself up this hill, but I've got to get everyone else up the hill too. So the military tactics, when you think about it, actually work really well in business too, because you don't leave any men behind. Of course there's some people that have to find their happiness elsewhere, and go to another organization or whatever, but your core team should be helping kind of fight those battles that you're looking at every day and have that same mindset that you do of not giving up. Let's just get this until we get it. And you don't even have to be, perfect. Just get it 1% better every day. I mean, you hear all these things all the time, but celebrate the small stuff too. I mean, don't forget, we are always saying we're in this journey, but then there's so many little things around that are in the journey. You should keep a book. I keep a book. It's right here. I don't know if you can see it, but I just write down little cool things that happened on the daily. And it might just be one or two sentences. But then I look back and I tell my team, oh my gosh, you remember this and that. I mean, this is kind of like our memoirs. I'm going to write this down for, today goes in that I did a podcast on Valentine's Day. Okay, so I know I talked a lot there. I kind of went on and on, but does that answer some of what you were
Yeah, it definitely does.
asking?
And one
It
of
was a
the
really good
yeah, well,
question.
one of the things that you shed light on, both in your story and what I just heard you say, is, you know, you don't have to have all of the answers. And we were talking pre-show about just what a beautiful industry and beautiful, in my mind, family that this industry is. There are so many talents and so many people that are willing to help or point you to the right person who can help. And, and I think, you know, when you're in the momentum of noticing all the things that aren't going right and feeling really down on yourself, it can be challenging to feel like you're ready to raise your hand. Yeah. But what you said is just so true. What would you tell your beginner self to do? Like if you were redoing this, you'd tell yourself, ask all the questions so that we're not ever here. Right. And so the way to not be here in 10 years is to ask all the questions. And even if that's humiliating or shameful or embarrassing, that's okay. That's okay. Because in 10 years, you're going to look back and just be so grateful that you had the courage to do that.
And and that's a good point. It is courage, you know? And I think that that's where you get the mindset to keep going, is that, you know, I guess somewhere in your inner self, you know that you're a champion. It's just, you've got to figure out, you know, that's why you see all these things that are, you know, these little diagrams where it's like the journey is not, or the success is not, you know, vertical. It's a mess. You know, that's so true. And, you know, going back to my earlier statement on a dentist wears lots of hats. I mean, think about a dentist that, and we work with a lot of dentists that are forming their own groups now. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that, I'd love to talk to you, because I know it's hard. And I know that having the right people and the right advice, and people that you feel comfortable asking that advice of, you know, too many times in my life, I think I didn't want to ask questions because I was intimidated by that person. Well, you know, well, maybe it wasn't the right person or whatever. And looking back, I'm like, whatever, I should have just asked that question. But, you know, comfortability with people that are in your advisory group is really important, because you need to be able to be yourself, ask dumb questions. But it's really not a dumb question. It's just usually people see things from different sides of the fence. And, you know, I learned that growing up. I was dyslexic, you know, so I was always pulled out of the class. Like, I was like, you know, something's going on with her. But I look at things a little bit differently. And so it's actually a good thing. And I've used it to my advantage now. But I think we just all have to remember, and our industry is so beautiful in this way, that it's, I've never in really a long time in the past, you know, probably 10 years, have I felt like, gosh, man, I don't know where to turn or whatever, because I do know there's so many people in this industry that will pick up the torch. And honestly, this industry does things a lot of times pro bono. There's so many people in my network that are like, hey, I just want to help. I want to help. I care about this industry. I just want to help. So, you know, I think that is a great thing that you pointed out, is that there's help and there's resources and there's people that care and in this industry, and you may not know them now, but if you don't know them, call Chelsea or I, and we'll help you.
Absolutely.
We'll get connected.
Absolutely. And you know, my dad was in the Marines. Grandpa was in the military as well. And so I come from a big military background as well. And I wonder if that has something to do with just this, hey, every bear's invited team atmosphere. We're all going to win and we're all going to help each other. One of the things you were talking about pre-show is when you're looking at a deal, and I'm curious, what are you doing to unlock the people power ahead of the deal so that that is a more profitable experience?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. So when we're looking at a transaction, and we're usually dealing with larger transactions too. So let me preface that, you know, deals that are $5 million in EBITDA. So groups looking to transact is generally where we play. The first thing that I ask is, and I want to look at, is the team roster, you know, because over the last 3 years, I want to know who's circulated in and out. How long have the hygienists been there? How long have the providers been there? You know, everyone on the team, down to the person that's, you know, scrubbing the instruments. I mean, they're just as vital as anyone else on the team. And, you know, if there's a lot of turnover, it's a red flag, right? But let's ask more questions. So, you know, hiring and teams and things like that have not been as easy as they were, you know, pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. So I get that. And I know that there's a lot of things that have changed in the market. But I think, you know, the seller really needs to get real with the buyer on what exactly has happened. If there has been turnover, these are the things we've done. We've recognized there was X, Y, and Z occurring. And so we did A, B, C. And that allowed us to get to the outcome and the team that we have now, which are indicated in the numbers in the last trailing 12 months. But I think that the M&A team specifically needs to look more at the team roster, and not only just that, but, you know, the employment agreements for the providers, what's been promised to them, and also side conversations. You know, a lot of dentists, leaders, it's normal to have side conversations where you were at a bar one night with your partner who's an associate, well, not a partner yet, an associate, and you're like, hey, I want you to buy in 2 years. Well, we need to know that, because now you're at a different intersection, and we need to understand, okay, so maybe there's a plan that the buyer can put in place. And we do this all the time. If we know, because we do know, because we're asking the questions, let's put something in place, a pathway to partnership for this particular doctor. And let's make sure that it not only meets their needs, but exceeds their needs. Yeah. I like to do the transactions where we keep everybody. Everyone's always concerned, are we going to lose our jobs? The way that we do transactions, everyone is there that needs to be there for a reason. And we want to keep people happy. We want to keep people thriving. And we try to build post-close integrations advisory that allows these team members to thrive, not only thrive where they were at, you know, pre-close, but post-close, their situation is even better. And there's little things that we can do to improve that journey for them. And it's so important. And a lot of people are, you know, the reason why the industry is slowed with transactions is because all of the legacy and larger DSOs, they're digesting their integrations, which is, it's, you know, really been wildly, I don't want to say pushed aside, but it's, everyone's been focused on, you know, gobbling up as much EBITDA as they can. And the people and the integrations part has not had the attention or the love that it deserves. And my hat goes out to all of these integrations people out there. That is the hardest job in M&A. And it's the least, you know, likely to get all the accolades. But, you know, gosh, talk about an important role. If you don't have that in your DSO, you definitely need someone leading the charge there.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things that's coming to mind are some conversations I've been a part of where there is a transition either being spoken about or actually beginning to take place. And it's not appropriate to tell everyone all at once, hey, we're thinking about doing this merger, or hey, we're thinking about making this giant change. And that can actually be challenging for some leaders to know that the people who rely on them and trust them are keeping something from them. But it is actually, in my perspective, better that we roll out information in a strategic fashion, because not everyone Absolutely. Actually needs that information at once. So talk to me. I'm sure you have a process in place, but tell me about how you advise in those situations. Because I know we've got a lot of people listening who are either at the beginning of that process or thinking about entering that process.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even think we were going to touch on this subject at all, but you know, back to the military. Okay. So there's a chain of command, you know, right. There's the needs to knows, there's the guys that are, you know, like Napoleon, that are sitting there overlooking the entire battlefield. you have to trust the leader that they have the bird's eye view on what's happening, right? Then the leader deploys, you know, their staff sergeants into, and the staff sergeants, you know, that would be the operations people. You know, I think first having alignment from the leadership's perspective. So whether or not you're just, you know, 5 or 6 dentist owner, or you have an outside partner, you know, everyone needs to be aligned on the transaction, you know, from the leadership perspective. Then the leadership, because you know the players who you're going to have to then go and communicate with this on, the leaders need to align on a game plan based on the dynamics of their, you know, of their culture, of the people that are their staff sergeants, right? I recommend once the leadership is aligned, And that should be a day off site, by the way, like not for every transaction, but if you're doing something that you're acquiring, you know, multi-site operations, like you guys really need to deep dive. And it shouldn't just be a middle of the day call where you try to get everyone, you know, let's go to someone's cabin and let's hash this out. And let's not just talk about the numbers. Let's talk about the girl that scrubs the instruments, because we're buying a team. At the end of the day, we're buying a revenue stream that's generated by a team. And so I recommend offsites. Offsites, the leadership team develops the plan. Then they do another offsite with the operations team. I'm not saying you have to do a bunch of offsites, but offsites are good because look, people can clear their mind and they don't have to be like, you know, let's get people in a room where they can just be themselves. Talking about what I was saying earlier, you know, let's just be, let's not be so boardroom-like, right? You want the operations person at, you know, XYZ part of your organization to raise their hand, to feel comfortable enough raising their hand and saying, hey, I don't think this plan is going to work based on what I know about the transaction, because we need to consider X, Y, Z. Then you start making you. So you have, you know, the vision of what's going to happen in the transaction with the leadership. Then you bring the people that actually do the work and get the stuff done, the operations team together to fill in those holes. Like, okay, we didn't think of this. We didn't think of that. Yeah, we got to do this and that. Then you have a cohesive plan, you know, and the next line of defense, I mean, is going to the actual, you know, sellers and meeting their team. And that's a whole nother discussion, you know, and a whole nother plan, but you have to have an internal plan first of how you're going to take care of that acquiring team. You don't want to go to the acquiring team. So many people, I see so many people do this. They just like, oh, I'm going to bring lunch in and, you know, we're going to kick it. And it's like, I don't know. It's not, I've done these where we meet with every single person on the team individually, because I want them to feel special. Look, here's what's happened. Here's where we're at now. And here's where we can go together. And creating a pathway for them to be successful in the new, you know, environment is like huge. And I've seen hearts and minds totally go from like, oh, I hate this, to, oh, wow, you know, and they're on the bus then. And it's just caring, you know, but taking the time to understand, you know, Bobby Sue or Sally Joe, whatever, they're, you know, their position, what they've been doing, how they've been doing it, and asking them, look, we've done this and this and this. I love that you've done X, Y, and Z for the practice that we're acquiring. We would love you to help us develop blah, blah, blah. You know, and that creates, people want to be a part of things. They don't want to just be told what to do. They need to be able to rally around your vision. And so that, you know, a leader's job is to inspire, and you have to, if you don't understand the individual or the people on your team, like intimately, you can't inspire them. So I just think we need to take more time to do that. I could talk about that for a long time. There's so much more I could say, but I won't. because I know we're running out of time. But you know, I love what you do for the teams and the groups that you work for. It is so, you know, you and I were talking earlier. I didn't really know right away what you did, but the impact that you can have on a leadership team, on them personally, you're almost like the, did you ever watch that show Succession? No, not Succession, Billions. Billions.
No, I'll have to watch it now.
Okay, well, there's, yeah, watch it, because there's the most important lady in the show is a psychiatrist. She meets with every single part of the team. She knows what's going on, the dynamics, mm-hmm. and then she helps everyone, she helps the leadership pull it back together. I think every DSO in America needs somebody like you that can say, hey, let me help you level set, or somebody like me, let's look at this from a beginner's lens. Yeah. You know, and, you know, try to, you know, get everyone again with that clear vision and that headspace of, and that mindset of, I'm going to get back up and do it again. I mean, this time I'm going to do it better. Because yes. I've got more people that I've talked to. I've got more lessons I've learned. I've got my memoirs that, you know, I've mm-hmm. written in little things. That happened. And look, you could do this on your phone too. I mean, my husband gives me a hard time that I still have this little thing that I write on, but I'm 45 years old, guys. So, I mean, whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there is something to physically writing. There's actually studies about that. We're good with the handwriting. Yeah. I am a
okay,
proponent.
Good.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, no, you're so right. You know, I think one of the things that is really interesting to me is when I'm working with leadership teams, or I'm working with doctors in organizations, and then I'm hearing what the executives are saying. They are saying the same things in different languages. And so it's really interesting to be able to understand and then help align, because they actually often are aligned, or it's a quick adjustment or something.
Absolutely.
It's not as bad. And one of the things that stood out in what you were saying, you know, revolving the change management, is I have also found that people are a lot more positively responsive to harsh truths or bummers than they are being surprised or blindsided. But having that strategic method to roll it out allows us to have the answers that each party or group is going to be wanting, because sometimes we don't have all the answers for people all the way down the line. And so that's why I think just having a plan in place is so critical to that being a smooth transaction. So I do have another question for you. You're right. I know we got to wrap up, but if you were going back and you're, you know, looking at yourself, because we've got lots of people at all stages of business building, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago? What would you do differently?
Get out of my own way. I was in my way so many times. I was in my own head with things that no one probably even noticed or cared about. But I wanted to, you know, I think my nature is in a lot of people's, you like to please people. I like to make people happy. I like to bring joy to people, rather. Like, I want, when I walk in the room, where people like, oh, Sam's here. You know, I mean, I really love people. And I think that having loving, nurturing people in your life is the key to a long, happy life. And so I want to be those for everyone. Like, I want to give a smile. I want to, but I would just say, let me get out of my own way and not be so hard on myself. You know, I probably could have, gosh, I probably could have conquered, you know, mountains and, you know, probably taken out Napoleon Bonaparte if I had had just the confidence that I have now. And now I realize with confidence, I'm going to walk into the room like I was meant to be here, because I have something to say, and it's important, and it's based on having a heart and knowing the industry the way that I do. And so I hope that answers your question. That's a really, there's so many things, right? If you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But getting out of my own way and just letting myself be the amazing person that I am. And it's not because I'm doing all these great things or whatever, but like, I just know I'm good in my lane of genius. And there's other people too that are really good on their lane of geniuses. And if we can meet more people that have that abundance mindset, we could come together and just do powerful things. And that's what I want to do with this industry. And it's ripe for it.
Me too. Well, Sam, you are a powerhouse. You are an incredible asset to this industry. And I am just so glad to know you. And I'm glad to have you on the show today. Happy Valentine's Day, and thank you for being here.
Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you so much, Chelsea. I look forward to seeing you soon.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.